welcome you to my podcast, Neue Musik Leben. This is usually a German podcast, but once in a while, and sometimes even more often, I do English episodes. And I love doing English episodes. I have studied classical singing and music, but I love to sing contemporary, experimental, new music. And if you would like to know more about me, please look at my website www.irenekurka.de. I will put this into the show notes. And in this podcast, I talk about topics all around contemporary experimental music. I share with you behind the scenes, insider knowledge, and I really want to bring you, the human beings out of the new music world, much closer to you. I'm cooperating with the NMZ, Neue Musikzeitung, which is a very important German paper about, music, about all topics of music. I'm also always very thankful when you email me and contact me. I get lovely, lovely messages from all over the world. And that makes me very happy and also motivates me to continue with this podcast. Now I have a little series for you because, last year I was supposed to travel to Great Britain and I love traveling to Great Britain. I was invited to sing in Oxford and, we all know what happened. COVID-19 came and all these things were cancelled. So far I could not travel to Great Britain and work with my wonderful colleagues there. And now it's almost a year that we have this coronavirus in this world and with all the regulations and things that come along with it. And so I was thinking so much about being with my colleagues, working with them, and I was really also curious to know how they are doing. And this is how I came up to make this little series with four wonderful colleagues. And there are composers, James Weeks, James Saunders, and Tim Parkinson. And I'm also very happy to have as a guest in my show Juliet Fraser, who also is a soprano singer. And she is a colleague I admire very much. And so I'm very happy that she also is in my show. This episode is the interview with the singer Juliet Fraser.
Hello, Juliet. Hello, Juliet Fraser. I'm so happy to have you today in my podcast, Neue Musik Leben.
Well, it's my pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me. It's really nice to speak with you at last.
Yeah, finally we speak. We're both singers. And at first I would like to know, how did you find your way into new and experimental music?
Nice question. The simple answer is that I think it was through my years as an oboist. First I played the cello, but then I played the oboe quite seriously from the age of, 11 till about 20. And the oboe has this kind of split in its repertoire between loads of Baroque music and then loads of later 19th century and then 20th century repertoire. But there's a bit of a hole in the middle. There are some classical pieces, only really one or two romantic pieces. So it's this kind of bookending that for me, I think, started as an oboist. And then when I started singing in my 20s, it expanded outwards. So the old stuff, well, of course, there's a huge amount of Baroque repertoire that I have sung, but then I expanded into the Renaissance and then a bit beyond that eventually, and then expanded from what I used to call modern music, which would be 20th century stuff, Hindemith, I suppose, was my oboe piece. It expanded forwards into later 20th century and then 21st century repertoire now.
Wow, that's great. Well, since I'm a singer as well, I'm curious how then you made the bridge from the oboe to the singing. And did oboe playing help you? I mean, how is the breathing for oboe playing and singing?
Yeah, good question. I a lot of people say that it's that they're not helpful because the pressure is so different. You have high pressure with the oboe and kind of none, no resistance with the voice. I think I never really did the two at the same time. So I started singing really after I had stopped playing the oboe. So there wasn't a period when I was trying to do both. I suppose what I can say is that it's probably helpful that the range that you have on the oboe is very similar to my range as a soprano. Also, I think it's through endlessly giving A's for the orchestra as an oboist that I developed a sort of perfect pitch. So the pitch that I rely on now as a singer still always comes back to an A and a D. And I'm sure that's from memorizing those notes as an oboist. And then I have to say that I've had to do a lot of work on kind of opening the mouth, releasing the mouth and the jaw. And the other thing that I remember was just this feeling of exposure when I first was performing as a singer. I don't have an instrument. What do I do with my hands? Like, where are people looking? Where am I supposed to be looking? The training as an instrumentalist is so different. It's fine to gaze out into the distance or to close your eyes or to look at your colleagues. As a singer, suddenly there's this whole classical expectation of performing, which really comes from like leader and opera, which was totally alien to me. So I definitely had this uncomfortable transition period of working out what to do with my face and my body without an instrument there.
Wow, very interesting. Also interesting that you have some kind of a perfect pitch now.
Very useful.
And what represents good, new and experimental music for you?
Oh, wow. I think I would have to say that I don't like the word good for anything, really. I don't know what that means. So, of course, it's subjective. But I think the music that I'm attracted to is making a new proposition somehow. And I don't like the obsession that we can have that everything has to be completely new and completely radical. That's not at all what I'm saying, but I think to have the sense that there is a very genuine need to express something new, and it could just be new because it is personal to the person that's expressing it. I think that's what I look for. I think it's probably a bit different in different pieces. We're touched in different ways, right? So sometimes we feel that there's a very strong emotion that touches us. Sometimes it's really quite a technical proposition, like a way of hearing sound or an acoustic phenomenon that strikes us. Yeah, I'm not too sure. And I'm not sure I want it to be one thing, right? I like to be surprised a bit.
I understand you. The curiosity and the surprise feeling.
exactly that.
Well, I'm a big fan of your Cold Trip by Bernhard Lang. That's one of my favorite recordings. What are the qualities you most appreciate in composers you work with?
Well, you just used this word, but I think curiosity. I think I am, or maybe we all are, but I'm very interested in the interaction that I can have with them. So it's not just about their private process that might lead them to compose a piece, important though that is. But we're so shaped as performers, but also as interpreters of that particular piece of music by our interaction with the composer. And I find it exciting when I can witness a curiosity. And that means that I'm seeing that they have an openness to learning something about the voice, probably, as much as just saying, this is my music, please do it the way that I hear it in my head. So I would like there to be a two-way traffic with both of us learning from one another. So I think that sense of curiosity or openness mm-hmm. is important for me.
And is there a certain kind of music you like singing a lot, or how do you choose pieces?
I think I'm always surprised by what the piece turns out to be. I don't know about you, but even when I'm sent a score that exists and somebody says, would you like to sing this? The gap between how I imagine the piece to be when I read it and then how it turns out to be when I have actually learned it and perform it, the gap is enormous. So to a certain degree, I think I want to learn the piece to see what the experience is going to be. But in terms of what I'm attracted to, I think it shifts all the time because I really like having this variety in my repertoire. So it might be that if I've had to sing a lot of very quiet, still music, then suddenly I'm looking for something much more virtuosic and expressive in a different way. So I'm not sure there's a single answer to that, but to say that the variety is really important to me and to try and get this sense of balance of differences within the repertoire.
I have the same feeling. This is also why yeah. I like singing contemporary music so much, because I can be so different in every piece and find something new in myself. But I also realized, I mean, you also have been singing for a while like me, and that I think after my studies, I really took on every piece. I was so curious, and I didn't care how difficult and what. And now, since I have done things, I think I choose now more carefully and see, or I can more relate how much work is this and what is the outcome, and is this satisfying mm-hmm. me, or do I say no, I have done that, I don't need to do that anymore. And I also get pieces where I really feel those are my pieces, where I really can show what I'm about, because every singer is so different. But on the other hand, I also choose sometimes pieces where maybe there's something new, or I feel, oh, this could really challenge me, but I want to be challenged. And so that's kind of the mix.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point. I think that is something that happens as we maybe get a bit older or more confident. I don't know this. So I would almost find it easier to say the things that I know that I don't want to do. Mm. And then you're right. It's about finding the challenges that I say, yes, I can see a bit of Juliet Fraser in that piece, but I think it's going to take me to a new place that is really exciting. Whereas a piece that is somehow just not me at all, or that plays to none of my strengths. I mean, a piece that would expose all my weaknesses, for obvious reasons, I'm not sure I want to do that.
Yeah. And it was also something I felt I matured into it, because mm-hmm. I know, you know her too, a German singer, Salome Kammer, and I mean, she's a little bit older than we are, and I don't know when I met her, it was a while ago, and I was then I have to learn everything, and I talked to her, and then I also asked her, and she since she's older, she was like, oh, Irina, I don't have to climb on any mountain, not on every mountain anymore, I really choose now. And I thought, how can she say that?
Yeah.
And now I understand her so much, because at some point you're like, yeah, it's nice, I've been there, I've done that.
And we can't be everything. Nobody can in any sphere, but particularly as singers, we can't be everything to everybody. So we have to choose. We have to choose what we want to be and what direction we want to go in. And the voice also changes, right? So it's as much about listening to my body and my voice and letting it tell me the directions that it's happy to travel in at the moment.
Yeah, that's fascinating and challenging at the same time. Yeah. There's one question I often ask singers too, because I find it challenging. And I also asked our common friend James Weeks about it. Is there anything you can say about how to sing good microtones, or do you have an opinion on that?
It's funny. So many singers are very anxious about this, right? I do get asked about this a lot. I have two answers that come immediately to mind. The first answer is just very, very generally, I think it's like anything, you have to be disciplined about it. You have to find a way to break down the challenge and to resolve it. And there's nothing inherently difficult about microtones, apart from the fact that our ear is schooled, but we learn all sorts of alien foreign things to us all the time. And so I think it's quite important not to demonize the microtone, if you like. Just get on with the business of trying to learn how to sing them. And then more practically, I think it's as important to train your ear as it is your voice. So sometimes I practice whistling them, for example, or spending time at the piano just trying to hear the space between the semitones. And also, I think the notation is really important. So when I'm working with composers, I get them to try and understand that because our 12-tone system is so ingrained, we are always thinking of a microtone in relation to a semitone or to a chromatic, a 12-tone pitch. So if there's a complicated line and you're having to bend the microtone in changing directions, so one is up and one is down, that's a real nightmare for the head. So sometimes if I'm learning a really complicated passage, I'll rewrite it in 12-tone, but always below the microtone, so that then I'm always bending the whole passage up, rather than this combination of up and down. So, I mean, that's just one technique for kind of simplifying and then building it up a bit.
I think that's an important note you make, yeah, that you can help at least somewhat with a notation that,
yeah,
your brain doesn't go crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's complicated because there's always this tension about whether it's better to have a combination of, say, quarter flats and three-quarter sharps, which looks busier on the page. But if, I don't know, it depends on the passage, but certainly I encourage composers to think about the horizontal line and how a singer's brain might actually be approaching that passage.
No.
There's never a simple answer, though, is there?
Well, I thank you very much for your answer. And, well, we're talking about singing, lots of singing. And I know that you also started a very, very lovely ensemble, Exaudi. And I think you have such a great sound. I have quite some CDs of yours also, since I know and work with James Weeks. And you together founded this wonderful vocal ensemble. How did it came about that you started this?
We were very young and very foolish. that's how all the best stories begin, probably. It was right in the transition period for me between being an oboist and becoming a singer. And I had worked with James at university. Well, I say worked with, I mean, we were students, we were friends, as an oboist. And I knew that he was a conductor, of course, but also a composer. And I called him up one day and I said, listen, I've got this idea. I want to try and recreate my love of chamber music that I had as an oboist with voices and to do contemporary music. What do you think? And he said, yes, great, let's do it. So we did. I mean, I was really not a singer at that point. I was kind of flirting with the idea of whether it might be possible to be a singer, but I don't think I'd had a singing lesson ever in my life. I didn't know what I could do. I just had this idea that I wanted to try it. It's still going. You know, we're going to be 20 years old. The ensemble will have its 20th birthday next year.
Oh,
it's incredible, no?
Oh,
And it's been quite a fight to keep it going, but we're still here. It's really good.
I also like it that with Exaudi or in some other work you do, that you also do this old music and this new contemporary music. And I also like combining things, for example, with Hildegard von Bingen. And I find it a great pleasure for me for the actual singing, but also I think for the audience, sometimes it's also easier to get a grip of both styles. And I always feel that, yeah, your ears open up when you hear different styles or different music epochs.
Yeah, and, it's true. And yeah, there are actually strong aesthetic links between a lot of the contemporary music that we do and the early music. They're not so far apart.
Yeah. So how is it for you to combine those early and contemporary music and also singing wise?
It's wonderful. I think it's only a richness. In a way, I try not to distinguish too much between the two. It's like anything. You just try and find a way to let the music tell you how it needs to be sung.
Great, yeah. It's just about singing.
About singing, yeah.
I also made this thing when I did some pieces by Carola Baukold, which were, well, quite challenging or more in an experimental theater way for my voice. And with one piece, I really thought like, oh my God, is this gonna be too much for my voice? And could it really hurt me? And then I always sang a Handel aria afterwards when I was practicing it. And the interesting thing was that the Handel aria got better after I was making those weird sounds. So I'm like, no, I'm not hurting my voice.
Yeah, that is interesting. I use Mozart for that these mm-hmm. days. Yeah, but Handel, I can see, would also be perfect. I just didn't have my Handel anthology with me.
Okay. Great. Well, you also now have a CD label. You're very, very busy. All That Dust. What are you doing there?
Well, that's a good question. What are we doing there? It started really because, so there are three of us running it. I run it with a composer, Newton Armstrong, and pianist, Mark Knoop. It started because we'd all had experience of being frustrated with the process of trying to release CDs, either that it was very expensive or that it was very slow. And we felt that quite often the artist wasn't really supported through the process. So we thought that we might see if we could find a way to create a process that really supported the artist simply. And then I suppose the other thing that we're doing is we're just trying to, so we release batches. So we release little collections of releases once a year. We were trying to create some rather interesting connections between the individual releases within the batch to, I suppose, propose something a little bit surprising to our listeners. So it's all very humble, really, and modest in what we're trying to do. It's four or five releases a year. It's very much a labor of love. But I think we're quite pleased, really, with what we've done so far and hope to keep going for a bit longer.
I keep my fingers crossed.
Yeah, thank you.
And, well, there are so many things you do. There is another thing which has a very lovely title, eavesdropping.
Yeah.
That is a podcast or a symposium or both, or what is eavesdropping?
Well, actually, I would say mostly I describe it as a series, so really mostly it's about live performance. It's shifting at the moment because we're having to adapt to the circumstances, but I'm looking at season three at the moment. So it's quite new. I started it in 2017. And the main idea actually was to be able to put on some events in a really beautiful but very small space in East London where I had been practicing for several years. And it's an old wooden chapel at the top of a building that was built in 1890 something or other, with a really beautiful acoustic, but horrible leaking roofs. And I just wanted to try and put on some events in there that would let the public explore it and let the performers explore it. And so it's a series of four events, each a double bill, so that's eight artists. And then the series concludes with a symposium, which is a weekend long opportunity for discussions and presentations and conversations and performances, very free really, on a particular topic. So that's the model. And really the idea is to create a platform for female performers or female identifying performers working at the experimental edges of any kind of genre to test out new material. So the whole atmosphere is quite informal, quite intimate. It's to give the audience an insight into music that people are really making at the moment or experimenting with at the moment. And a bit to try and build community really between performers working in different areas or different territories, because I think they can feel a bit isolated. So that is the huge aim of a very tiny thing, yes.
It sounds very, very good. I think you should keep going. And last year, I mean, we are now in this corona time crisis period. And I think last year with eavesdropping, you also went then digital, right? Because you couldn't do
that's it. That's right. So I think we did the first two in the series live, and then we did the last two in the series. People did pre-recorded videos, and then we ran the symposium online. And I was very skeptical about whether that would work. And actually, it was really lovely. It came at the beginning of the lockdown in April, and people really needed to gather, I think. And I'm looking at how to do it. It hopefully will happen in April, and I don't know how yet, but somehow. Yeah, it's turned out to be a really beautiful thing, Irena. It's kind of, it's surprised me how much I've loved it. And we've had some really beautiful artists present beautiful, beautiful music. And I love our audience. They listen so well. And really a lovely atmosphere of true curiosity again, and generosity, I think, towards the artists. I'm very, very pleased by what we've created.
That sounds really great. But that's also what I also experienced when I was singing in Great Britain. I find your audience is, I mean, for me from the outset, seems so open and so curious. And
I'm pleased to hear that. That's good.
I enjoyed that, and also how some festivals curate, that they put really different styles of music together, and somehow it works. And in Germany, we are more like in boxes, so that always fascinates me when I'm there, or when I sing really whatever quiet still music, and after me, well, there was almost some like punk rock band or something, but the audience listens to everything.
It's yeah. Yeah, that is good.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, we mentioned it just that we are in the corona times. How is life for you these days and for the art scene, and what are you doing?
Well, today I did some yoga and I planted some trees and I had a few conversations and
you planted trees?
Yeah.
Really cool. Do you have a garden or where do you
normally I live in London, but now for several months I've been living in the countryside with my parents, which I must say is really wonderful, because there's some space to breathe and to walk around without worrying about encountering people. But mainly I came up here because I can't sing in my very small apartment in London. So I escaped to the countryside to be able to make some noise here. So that's, I mean, that's kind of what's going on for me. I mean, I'm sure I have the challenges that everybody faces. It's difficult to keep motivated. I don't know what I'm practicing for. Mm-hmm. I miss singing with people so much. I'm bored of myself, you know. I'm bored of my own ideas. I'm bored of how critical the voice inside my head is. I need to get out and be with people and sing something from beginning to the end without being able to stop. That would be great. Mm-hmm. And then in the UK more generally, it's very worrying. Culturally, everything is paralyzed completely, and the future is very uncertain here.
Hmm.
So it's very difficult.
Okay.
And honestly, I try not to think about it too much.
Okay. Okay. I heard one nice thing, or I also read it on your page, that Café Otto did, instead of those regular wonderful concerts, some CDs, and you also did a CD with Café Otto, and I think also very interesting stuff, right?
They have done an amazing thing. They created a special label called Takuroku, which is especially for lockdown projects. And the catalogue is enormous now, and it has an incredible diversity of artists, because Café Otto, for those people that don't know it, it's a small music venue in East London that programs everything from experimental contemporary music to a lot of free jazz, improvisation, experimental anything of any sorts. Totally amazing institution. And they also are very generous to their artists with these releases. For example, in January, well, it's finished now, but they gave 100% of their Bandcamp proceeds to the artists. You know, it's amazing. They really care about the arts and about performance. I love that venue. It's very special. Yeah,
it's a very great venue. I've been there too. And
It
makes me happy to hear that they found something they can do, even though everything is closed. And
they're incredibly determined. They're very impressive like that, really. And they have big challenges about how to maintain the venue and that sort of thing at this time. But I'm so impressed by what they're doing.
Yeah, me too. Well, we already heard what all different things you do. You're multi-artist, multifaceted artist. And do you have any approach of some kind of time management, or is there anything you could advise?
No.
You did yoga. That's good.
No. I have no approach to time management. No. I mean, probably my approach to time management is basically work as hard as I can until I burn out, and then sleep for a bit and then start again. It's really bad. But I'm trying to get better at that.
Okay. What are you thankful for today?
I'm thankful for my health. And I'm thankful for the space outside. I can hear the birds singing, and it's been a beautiful sunny day. I'm thankful to have space. For me, having this air and the fields around me just helps to open up the psychological landscape, if you like. And my experience of, I did 9 weeks alone. It's even not so long now, but the first 9 weeks of the first lockdown, I spent alone in my rather small apartment in London. And that's hard. It's much easier being here. So I'm thankful for that.
Mm. And who or what has played the greatest role in shaping you, and what inspires you?
I'm not too keen on idols. I don't really have heroes, I must say. I think I realized quite early on that trying to be somebody else or trying to follow somebody else was not going to work for me. So I can think of people that have really helped me along the way, like my first choir director who just believed that I might be able to sing one day. He was amazing. But I think it's kind of my guts or my instinct which shapes me the most. And it almost feels like it's a separate thing from me, but I try to listen to that a bit, try to listen to the thing in my guts that says, yes, do that. No, don't do that. Yes, dream about that. I think that's what shapes.
That's, I think, a great motivation if you can feel your gut.
Yeah, well, when it speaks, well. Yeah, you have to listen for sure.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And what does it mean then for you to be true to yourself or authentic in this music business? And how do you keep true to yourself?
Yeah, to listen to my gut.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think to resist the role of the diva, which people are always trying to put on us, as sopranos in particular, I think. I don't want to be that. I don't want to be that person. I don't want to be a cliche. It's not interesting to me at all or useful. So I think that's, what was the word that you used? Authentic or something? Authentic
or true to yourself, yes.
Yeah, I think it's, yeah, just to try and be me, even if that's sometimes a bit of a strange person, not to be somebody else that I think I'm expected to be.
And what does success mean for you?
Something like satisfaction or fulfillment, artistic satisfaction or fulfillment. And then of course within that there's something more complex, right? Because it's this constant process of being stretched and then settling and then stretched again and then settling. So the overall journey is something of growth, of development. But there are these little points along the way where for a little period you feel satisfied, you know that you've reached for something, you've stretched into something. And then you can think, okay, I took a risk and that was good. Even if it failed, I took a risk, and that's what life is for. Life, I want the experiences, and I want to take the risk.
And is there anything that drives you forward, or do you have a vision?
No. I don't have a vision. No. I mean, you know, part of me just thinks, just keep going as long as I can until somebody tells me to stop.
You're going and doing so many great things.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's the guts again. I think that's the vision. I don't know what it's going to tell me to do next, but I just try and follow the next adventure somehow.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no 5-year plan or strategy or something like that. I suppose there have been in the past. There have definitely been moments when I was transitioning. First of all, most of my work was as a choral singer. And I remember clearly there was a time when I said, okay, I want to do ensemble stuff and solo stuff, enough with the choral member. I want to have more creative input into the thing. And then there was another period when I decided to reduce the amount of ensemble singing that I was doing, and to really try and build up the solo stuff for the same reason, to feel more satisfied, more creatively engaged. So there have been moments when I've had a kind of a clear vision of a change to make. Yes. At the moment, I don't really have that. I'm very happy doing what I'm doing, or what I was doing before we all had to stop. Yeah.
Well, we're ready at the last question, and I would like to which tip would you like to give young artists?
Are they singers, do you think? Or maybe they're anything, are they?
Whoever you want to give it to. Whatever you want to say.
I think I would say, if the path doesn't seem to fit you, just walk your own way. I think I wish that somebody had been able to tell me that when I was in my 20s. I felt like there was only really one or two paths as a singer, and I tried the obvious one and with no success, and I felt that maybe that meant that I shouldn't be doing what I was doing. But actually, there is no one path for anything. And it's much more satisfying to, I think, to try and find your own way. So I think that would be my advice.
Great. Great. Yeah. I thank you so much for this great conversation and with those also deep insights. And I'm also very happy that at least through the internet, I could finally meet you, but hopefully also in person soon again.
Yeah, I would love that. And of course, now I want to hear all your answers to the same questions, Irena. I feel like we've only done half the conversation, but I guess that's another podcast.
We could do that as another podcast, and yeah. We can think about that, how we do that. I mean, I'm always also enjoying that to really talk with another singer, because I mean, yeah. there are also other things that connect. I mean, and well, we keep that in mind.
Thank you.
Right now, you're my guest, my wonderful guest. And
very good.
And I wish you good luck with everything, and yeah, see you around.
Thank you so much.
I really hope that you could take lots of inspirations and motivations and ideas for you out of this interview. I'm looking forward to hear from you, get ideas, suggestions, feedback through Facebook or email. I thank you very much that you tuned in with me today. I hope that you liked it, and I also hope that this episode has inspired you. It would make me really happy if you could tell your friends and colleagues about this podcast. Thank you very much. I wish you all the best. Live your music, live your life, and see you next time. Yours, Irene.